Chapter 13. A Terrible End. I suppose my face was pale as I answered Miles. "Yes," I said. "But we're not completely alone. We wouldn't like that, would we?"
"No, I suppose we wouldn't. Of course we've got the others,"
I agreed with him. "Yes, we've got the others. Of course.
But even though we have them," he replied, "they aren't important, are they?"
I felt uneasy, but I managed to answer, "It depends what you mean by important."
"Yes," came the answer. "Everything depends."
Miles turned away, wandered over to the window again, and stood there for a while, with his head pressed against the glass. He stayed there, looking out over the damp November garden, as I went to the sofa and sat down. It was fortunate that I always had sewing to do, so I picked up a pair of gloves and pretended to start some mending. I was always prepared for the worst, but I became aware that something was changing. The children had kept me out of their strange world. But things were different now. Maybe Miles was letting me into his world. Or was Miles losing contact with it? It seemed as if he were looking through the window for something that he could not see. I could see that he was anxious and uncomfortable. But when he turned round from the window again, it was the charming little gentleman who spoke.
"Well, Bly may not be good for Flora, but I think I'm glad it's good for me,"
I answered bravely. "You've certainly seen a lot of it today," I said brightly. "I hope that you enjoyed yourself."
"Oh, yes. I've been everywhere, miles and miles away. I've never been so free," he replied politely.
I replied in the same polite way. "And do you like being free?" He stood there smiling. Then at last, he said in a very different, hard, cold voice,
"Do you?"
Before I could answer, he went on in his smooth, polite voice again.
"You've been very good about it, my dear, but I hope you don't particularly mind. We are alone together, of course, but now it's you who are most alone."
"Well, I do mind, of course," I replied, "but I know I can't teach you any more, because you are so much cleverer than me. So I can't ask you to spend your time with me, although I do enjoy being with you. What other reason can I have for staying here?" He stared at me very seriously, and at that moment I thought that his face had never looked more beautiful.
"You are staying here for that?"
"Yes, of course. I'm staying here as your friend until something can be done for you. That shouldn't be a surprise to you." My voice was shaking as I continued. "Don't you remember how I told you, when I came and sat on your bed on the night of the storm, that I wanted to help you?"
"Yes, yes. But I think you said that to make me do something for you."
He looked nervous, but he managed to sound as if he were joking. "But you know," I replied, "you didn't do it."
"Oh," he said very brightly. "You wanted me to tell you something."
"That's right. I wanted you to tell me what is worrying you," I said.
"I see. Then is that what you stayed here for?"
Miles replied with a laugh, but I could tell that there was a little anger too. "Well, yes, I'll admit it," I replied, laughing myself. "It was exactly for that." He waited a long time before answering, and then he said,
Do you mean I should tell you now? Here?
There couldn't be a better place or time, I replied. For the first time, I felt that he was afraid of me. This was a good thing, but it also made me pity him, and I found myself speaking to him gently. Do you want to go out again?
Oh, yes, I do.
He smiled bravely, and I smiled bravely back at him. It was as if we realized that something terrible was going to happen.
I'll tell you everything, Miles said. I mean, I'll tell you anything you like. You'll stay here with me, and we'll both be all right. I will tell you. I will. But not now.
Why not now? He turned away from me again and looked out of the window. There was complete silence in the room. When he turned back and faced me again, he said,
I have to see Luke.
Luke was one of the servants, and I knew Miles was lying. Because he had decided to lie to me, I was now certain that what I believed was true. I did some more sewing, then said, Well, go to Luke, and I'll wait for you to tell me what you promised to tell me. But before you go, I have one small thing to ask you. He still managed to answer bravely.
Is it a very small thing?
Oh, yes, I replied, looking down at my sewing, as if I didn't care about his answer. Tell me if, yesterday afternoon, you took my letter from the table in the hall. Then suddenly, it happened. I jumped up from the sofa, getting hold of Miles and falling against another piece of furniture while I kept his back to the window. Peter Quint was coming towards the window like a jailer outside a prison. The next thing I saw was that he had reached the window, and I knew that his white, evil face was once again pressed against the glass. I was as brave as any woman could be when I acted so quickly at that moment. I knew that I was fighting against something evil that wanted to possess the boy. I held Miles at arm's length in front of me and saw that his face was damp with sweat. The face that was close to mine was as white as the face pressed against the glass, and quietly he said,
Yes, I took the letter.
Hearing this, I put my arms around him and pulled him close to me, so close that I could feel his little body shivering and his heart beating. I kept my eyes on the thing at the window and saw it move slightly. I have said that it looked like a jailer, but now it looked like an animal which was not sure how to attack something. I was still brave, though, and I kept the child's back to the window. The face pressed itself against the glass again, as if it had decided to watch and wait. I felt more confident and spoke to Miles again.
What did you take the letter for? To see what you said about me.
You opened it?
I opened it.
I held the boy away from me and looked at his face. There was no smile now. He looked very uneasy. He was aware that something was here with us, but he did not know what. He did not know that I did know. When I looked back at the window, there was nothing there. Had my influence sent that corrupt and evil thing away? I felt joyful as I said to the boy, And you found nothing in the letter? He gave a sad little shake of his head.
Nothing.
Nothing! Nothing! I almost shouted with joy.
Nothing. Nothing,
he repeated, sadly. I kissed his head. It was wet with sweat. So, what did you do with it?
I burned it.
Burned it? I repeated. And then I had to ask, is that what you did at school?
At school?
Did you take letters or other things? His thoughts appeared to be a long way away, but he finally understood the questions.
Did I steal?
I felt my face go red as I heard his voice. I had accused a gentleman of stealing, and he was angry. But I continued. Was that why you couldn't go back to school? He looked a little surprised.
Did you know that I couldn't go back?
I know everything. He gave me the longest and strangest look.
Everything?
Everything. So, did you? But I couldn't say the word again. Miles could.
No, I didn't steal.
I believed him, but with my hands still on his shoulders, I shook him slightly.
What did you do?
He looked around the top of the room, not really seeing anything. Then he breathed in and out with difficulty 2 or 3 times, as if he were in pain. Finally, he answered me.
Well, I said things.
Is that all you did?
The headmaster thought it was enough.
To expel you for? I said. He seemed to think about the question, and then he said,
Well, I suppose it was bad to do it.
But who did you say things to? I asked. He looked as if he were trying to remember, but then he said,
I don't know.
He almost smiled at me. If I had not continued asking him questions, it would have been better. But I was so joyful with my success that I did continue. Did you say things to everyone?
No, it was only to...
But he shook his head sadly.
I don't remember their names.
Were there so many of them?
No, only a few. Boys I liked.
I was alarmed, because I could not understand what he was telling me. I suddenly wondered if, in fact, he was innocent. And if he was innocent, what did this make me? While I was thinking, I let him go, and he turned away from me towards the window. I did not mind him doing that now, because there was nothing there. And did the boys repeat what you said to the headmaster? I asked.
To the headmaster? Oh, yes,
he answered, very simply.
But I didn't know he'd tell you.
He didn't tell me, I said. That's why I'm asking you. He turned to me again, so I saw that his lovely little face was covered with sweat.
I suppose it was too bad to put in a letter.
It is hard to explain how strange and sad it was to hear those words from a beautiful child. But then I found myself saying, What were the things you said? The seriousness of my voice made him turn away from me again, and that movement made me look at the window.
With a loud cry, I got hold of the boy again and pulled him against me so he could not see anything. Because there, against the glass, was that terrifying face again. It was as if he had come to stop Miles answering my question. No more! No more! No more! I shrieked at the horror as I tried to press Miles's face against me. Is she here? Miles gasped.
I was amazed that he said, she, And I gasped too, and repeated it. She?
Miss Jessel! Miss Jessel!
He shouted, suddenly angry. I thought he was remembering what we had done to Flora, but I wanted to show him what was really there. It's not Miss Jessel, but it's at the window, just in front of us. It's there, there for the last time, I said. When he heard this, he pulled his head away from me, angry and confused. The room was empty, but to me it was filled with evil.
It's him?
I was obsessed with proving that he was possessed, so I immediately answered, Who are you talking about?
Peter Quint, you devil!
He looked helplessly around the room again.
Where?
I can still hear now how he said that dreadful name at last. I knew I had won. He doesn't matter now, my dear. I have you, I said. Then I shrieked towards the horror outside the window. But he has lost you forever! Miles managed to turn round now and see the window. But all he could see outside was the quiet day. The thing had gone. He let out a wild cry like an animal in pain, as if escaping from the thing that had possessed him. I caught him, as if he were going to fall. I held him tightly to me, but at the end of a minute, I began to feel what I truly held. We were alone with the quiet day, and his little heart had stopped. Penguin Readers, The Turn of the Screw, Henry James, Level 6. Retold by Fiona McKenzie. Illustrated by Natalia Grebsova. Series editor, Sorrel Pitts. Read by Jenny Bryce and Christopher Ragland. Copyright, Penguin Books Limited, 2021.